Years ago, I was preaching in Japan, and some Buddhist monks invited me to come and to stay in their monastery and to observe their life. And I was able to spend some time with the abbot. And I asked him at the end of our conversation, by your standards, how many people do you think are really transformed, enlightened? And he said, oh, maybe 15. I said, really? I said, how about all of history? He said, oh, maybe 1,000 at the top. Well, that could be very discouraging news. That's such a small percentage of people, at least by their criteria, really get the message. But it isn't necessarily bad news. In some ways, it's good news. Because that doesn't mean God doesn't love everybody else. But it means that most of us don't know how to enjoy it. We don't know how to appreciate it or live in such freedom. It's a very small percentage of people who really get it. But God, thank God, is patient and apparently unconditionally loving of what God has created. Now you're probably wondering what this has to do with John the Baptist. Well, in my opinion, John the Baptist is a very enigmatic figure. He gets it, but he doesn't get it at all. And Jesus recognizes this. He makes a somewhat contrary statement. He says, no man born of woman is greater than John the Baptist. But the least in the kingdom of God is greater than he is. John the Baptist is a transitional figure. But his genius is that he's pointing beyond himself because he knows he doesn't have the whole message. That's the point. He's a humble man who says, I must grow smaller and he must grow greater. That's his only genius. But of himself, if you read all of the stories we have of John the Baptist, he isn't really that likable. Most of you would probably not invite him over for dinner, wearing his camel hair coat and eating locusts. I visited the cave once where he supposedly lived. He had to leave the city. He created sort of his own down by the riverside religion, even though his parents were of the priestly caste. He got it that we need something more than this. This is not doing it. Just repeating these temple services. People are not really being transformed. And so he chooses what by Jewish standards would have been a pagan ritual, pouring water over people. It looks like a nature symbol again. What does this have to do with religion? Now we call it baptism and you take it for granted. But it wasn't normative at all. John was doing his own thing. Because he recognized organized religion was not doing it. And that's his genius, and that's why he is a necessary transitional figure, leading, in my language, people from what I call the first half of life to the second half of life. But it's not really apparent he's a second half of life person himself. He's moralistic, he's angry. He's ascetical. In fact, Jesus is accused of not being at all like John the Baptist. They say the people of John the Baptist, they fast and they're disciplined and they're hard on themselves. They say, you, Jesus, you associate with drunkards. Because Jesus was not into asceticism. It's really rather amazing, but I challenge you to go to the Gospels and find where Jesus emphasizes ascetical practices. He doesn't. He's about the great wedding feast, the great banquet, inviting us all to this banquet to which nobody wants to come. It seems most of the history of religion, of Christianity anyway, has been the religion of John the Baptist, much more than the religion of Jesus. We still think it's about punishing ourselves, and for some strange reason that's supposed to make God love us. Tell me why. Why would that make God love you? In fact, the greater surrender, the greater mystery, the second half of life, mature mystery, is to fall in this ocean of love and mercy and grace. And that's what Jesus means by the wedding banquet. Now you can see, actually it isn't in this passage, but in another passage of John the Baptist, that he seems to intuit this. He says, Jesus is the bridegroom. What an interesting word. Because Jesus is talking about a wedding feast, God marrying humanity. He says, all I am doing is pointing to the bridegroom. And he's right. So this is why it's a good feast. Because it tells you, brothers and sisters, you can get part of the message, which is all any of us do, and it's still okay. God can still use you. God still obviously loves you. You're still God's beloved son or daughter. None of us have to get it perfectly, and hardly any of us do. And what John the Baptist is saying, and what Jesus is saying about John the Baptist, is, you know what? That's still okay.